At Contra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Welcome, curious minds, to another deep dive. Today, we're looking up, way up. We are tackling really humanity's oldest, most enduring intellectual quest.
That's right. We're diving into Michael Hoskins' incredible book, The History of Astronomy.
And this isn't just, you know, a list of dates and discoveries.
Not at all. Hoskins' central argument really is that these huge shifts in how we see the universe, they're rarely those clean aha moments. It's more like a slow motion battle, often against, well, mathematical beauty or philosophical neatness. And it consistently forced us humans to accept a maybe smaller place in the cosmos.
Yeah, that tension is key. When you look at the source material, our mission here is to understand that story, how each new piece of tech, like the telescope, didn't just show us new stars, but it actually like shattered the whole way people thought, forced us to redraw our mental map of reality.
And that's exactly why this history still matters so much today, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Every time we had to let go of a fundamental assumption like the Earth being the center of everything.
Geocentrism, yeah.
It basically created a pattern. It showed us how deep intellectual change happens and just how, well, uncomfortable truth can sometimes be.
So who is our guide on this journey? Michael Hoskins. Let's talk about him for a second.
Okay. Yeah. Hoskins. He was an emeritus professor, history of science at Cambridge, a really foundational figure. And crucially, he founded and edited the Journal for the History of Astronomy.
The main journal in the field.
For over 40 years. I mean, that kind of dedication, that depth of scholarship, it's pretty rare.
And what makes his viewpoint so distinct?
Well, I think it's that he wasn't just a historian listing facts. He managed to bridge the gap between, you know, the historical context and a really deep technical grasp of the astronomy itself.
That's crucial for this topic.
Absolutely. And his core commitment, methodologically speaking, is what makes this book so valuable. He really insists we have to understand old theories like Ptolemy's Earth-centered system.
The one that lasted forever.
Exactly. Yeah. We need to understand it in its original context. The question isn't, was Ptolemy right? That's kind of the wrong question.
So what should we ask?
We should ask, what problems was he actually trying to solve? You know, given the tools, the observations, the philosophy of his time?
Right. Separating how well a system worked back then from whether it was ultimately true. Okay, so let's try and grasp the sheer scale of this book. It's huge.
It really is. Hoskins takes us all the way from the absolute earliest human sky watching, think prehistoric sites, Stonehenge.
Wow.
Right through to modern cosmology, Hubble, the Big Bang, dark matter, even exoplanets. It's like the entire story of us looking up and wondering.
And that wondering, that curiosity, it went through this massive change conceptually.
Totally. We started seeing the heavens as, you know, the realm of gods, maybe omens, this perfect unchanging place. And then we shifted to seeing it as a physical universe, governed by laws we could actually measure and hopefully understand.
That shift really is the history of astronomy. And Hoskins digs into these key turning points.
Yeah, like the move from just predicting stuff, which the Babylonians were amazing at, to the Greek focus on theory, on geometry. Then, of course, the huge upheaval of Copernicus saying the Earth moves.
Which was massive.
Massive. And Newton putting it all together, unifying physics. And then later, that shift from just mapping where things are to figuring out what they are.
Astrometry versus astrophysics.
Exactly. That change from just measuring positions astrometry to analyzing starlight itself with spectroscopy, figuring out composition, temperature, motion. That's astrophysics.
That really changed the game in the 19th century.
It turned astronomy into a different kind of science, really. But
yeah.
Okay, to trace all this, we need to start at the beginning, back when it was all about, well, necessity.
Right. Ancient foundations. You've got early civilizations just needing practical stuff, right? Farming, keeping time.
Exactly. Like the Egyptians, they tracked the star Sirius because its rising predicted the Nile flood. Super important for their survival.
Practical astronomy. Then you get the Babylonians. And you call it a paradox.
Yeah, it's sort of a paradox. They developed incredibly sophisticated math. They could predict planets, eclipses with amazing accuracy, often because they were interested in astrology, divination.
Ah, so the motivation wasn't purely scientific as we'd think of it?
Not in our modern sense. They had the math that worked incredibly well, but they didn't really have a physical model of the universe underpinning it.
And the Greeks changed that.
That was the Greek contribution, yeah. Philosophers like Aristotle, later Ptolemy, they turned it into a theoretical science. They insisted the cosmos had to be elegant, perfect.
So stationary Earth, perfect circles for everything moving in the sky.
Precisely. Uniform circular motion. And Ptolemy's huge work, The Almagest, around 150 AD. That was the peak of this.
How did he make that work? Planets don't move in perfect circles from our viewpoint. They do weird loops.
Right. Retrograde motion. So to save the philosophical idea of circles, he built this incredibly complex system. Epicycles, deference, basically circles riding on other circles.
Wow. Like cosmic spirograph.
Kind of. And it was brilliant mathematically. It did predict where the planets would be pretty well. Yeah. Well enough that it dominated Western thinking for, what, 1,400 years?
14 centuries. That shows you how powerful a successful model can be, even if the basic premise is wrong.
Absolutely. But, crucially, between the Greeks and the European Renaissance, we can't just skip ahead. The Islamic world played a vital role.
Right. Often called the preservers of Greek knowledge.
Yeah. But Hoskin emphasizes they were much more than just preservers. This wasn't a passive holding pattern. Scholars like El-Battani, many others, they didn't just save the Greek text. They actively critiqued them, improved Ptolemy's models, built better instruments like astrolabes.
Pushing the accuracy of observation.
Yeah, exactly. They were doing active science, making measurements better, refining the math. And that knowledge, those improvements, directly fed into the later European developments.
So that groundwork, that willingness to poke at the existing model, was essential for what came next.
Definitely. It set the stage for the revolution, which of course really kicks off with Copernicus.
The cautious revolutionary, as Hoskin calls him.
Yeah, cautious, because his big issue wasn't really that Ptolemy's system failed to predict things accurately enough. I mean, it wasn't perfect, but it was usable. Copernicus's problem was more aesthetic. He found Ptolemy's system mathematically clumsy, inelegant. All those epicycles felt messy.
He wanted something simpler, more harmonious.
Exactly. So his heliocentric model, putting the sun in the center, it achieved that mathematical neatness he was looking for. But, and this is key, even though it was radical conceptually,
putting the Earth in motion,
he still held on to the idea of perfect circular orbits, which meant his own math was actually still pretty complicated to make it work.
Huh. So it wasn't immediately simpler in practice.
Hmm.
Then came Tycho Brahe.
Ugh, Tycho. The king of observation. Before telescopes, mind you. Just incredible naked eye precision, building huge instruments on his island observatory.
And all that amazing data.
Ends up with Johannes Kepler. And Kepler, he was obsessed. He tried and tried and tried to fit the orbit of Mars into Copernicus's system using Tycho's super accurate data.
But it wouldn't fit.
It wouldn't fit. Not perfectly. There was this tiny nagging difference. 8 arc minutes.
8 arc minutes. How big is that visually?
It's tiny, like maybe a quarter of the width of the full moon in the sky. Insignificant, you might think.
But not to Kepler.
Not to Kepler. That tiny, persistent error, that refusal of the data to fit the beautiful theory of circles, forced him to do something revolutionary. He ditched 2,000 years of belief in perfect circles.
And came up with ellipses.
Ellipses.
Yeah.
Because the data demanded it. That moment for Hoskin is like the epitome of the scientific method. The hard empirical evidence, no matter how small or inconvenient, has to win over the elegant theory or the long-held belief.
Wow. So Kepler gives us the mathematical shape, but we still needed the proof.
We needed the proof everyone could see, or at least that challenged the old view directly. And that's where Galileo comes in, with the newly invented telescope.
He didn't invent it, right, but
he heard about it, built his own improved versions, and crucially pointed it at the sky. And what he saw just blew the old ideas apart.
Like what?
Phases of Venus. Just like the moon has phases. That only makes sense if Venus orbits the sun, not the Earth.
Okay, that's big.
Moons orbiting Jupiter, showing that not everything orbits the Earth. And mountains and craters on the moon, sunspots on the sun, shattering the idea of perfect, unchanging celestial bodies.
So the heavens weren't perfect. They were physical places.
Exactly. Galileo provided the visual, empirical knockout punch to the old Aristotelian Ptolemaic universe.
Okay, so Copernicus had the idea. Kepler did the math. Galileo provided the visual evidence. But something was still missing.
The why? They described how the planets moved ellipses around the sun, but why did they move like that? What force was holding it all together?
Enter Newton.
Enter Isaac Newton. His theory of universal gravitation was the grand synthesis. It wasn't just about apples falling from trees. It was the same force holding the moon in orbit around the Earth and the planets around the sun.
So the laws of physics weren't different for Earth and the heavens.
That was the revolutionary part. One set of universal laws governed everything, everywhere. It transformed the universe conceptually into this vast, predictable, almost clockwork machine.
A clockwork universe. That idea dominated for centuries.
Absolutely. So Newton kind of gives us the operating manual for that clockwork universe. But Hoskin argues there are deeper lessons here beyond the science itself. What are the big takeaways for us thinking critically today?
Okay, yeah. He boils it down to maybe three core themes. The first one is the power of anomaly and the resistance to change.
Like Kepler's 8 arc minutes.
Exactly. It's not just in science, is it? Mm. Big changes, revolutions in thinking often start with these small, annoying details that just don't quite fit the story everyone accepts.
Right. The things you're tempted to ignore or explain away.
And it takes real, like, intellectual honesty, maybe courage, even like Kepler had, to say, wait, maybe this tiny discrepancy is actually more important than the big, comfortable theory I've always believed. That applies everywhere, not just astronomy.
Yeah, I see that. What's the second theme?
The symbiotic dance of theory, observation, and technology.
Ah, the collaboration idea.
Yeah. Progress isn't usually one genius having a flash of insight in isolation. It's this interplay. You need the data collector, like Tycho.
Meticulous.
You need the theorist who can see the pattern, like Kepler.
Okay.
You need the technologist with the new tool, like Galileo.
Mm.
And maybe the synthesizer who puts it all into a grand framework, like Newton.
So it's teamwork across time, almost.
Exactly. And that applies to pretty much any complex project or innovation today, right? You need those different roles, that data, the interpretation, the tools, working together.
Okay, that makes sense. And the third one?
This one's maybe the most profound. The shifting center. A story of cosmic demotion.
Ooh.
Yeah. Hoskin traces how, step by step, humanity got kicked out of the center of things. First, Earth wasn't the center. The sun was Copernicus.
Uh-huh.
Then, oops, the sun isn't the center of the universe. It's just an average star in the outskirts of one galaxy.
Yeah.
It came later with Shapley and Hubble.
Among billions of other galaxies.
Billions. So this whole process, Hoskin calls it cosmic demotion. It's maybe the most humbling lesson science has taught us. We keep realizing we're on a smaller and smaller stage in a much, much bigger cosmic play.
But maybe that's not a bad thing, gaining perspective.
That's the twist. It's presented not as a loss, but as a gain in perspective, maybe even humility, when you grasp the true scale of it all.
Powerful stuff. The book must have some really memorable lines that capture these ideas.
Oh, definitely. He has a way with words. One that really sticks is, the history of astronomy is the history of receding horizons.
Receding horizons. I like that. Like every time we reach what we thought was the edge.
The edge just moves further out. We push the boundary of the known, only to find the unknown is just as vast, maybe even vaster. It's a constant expansion of mystery in a way.
Okay. What's another one?
This one hammers home the technology point. Each new instrument in astronomy has revealed phenomena that previous generations could never have imagined.
Right. It makes you wonder what we can't imagine now just because we don't have the right tools yet.
Exactly. It implies our current picture is definitely incomplete. And maybe a paraphrase for the last one, capturing the philosophical impact. No other science has required humanity to so completely reimagine fundamental assumptions about reality itself.
That's a bold claim, but you can see why he'd say it. Astronomy doesn't just add facts. It forces us to rethink our very place, our significance, our context.
It hits differently. So, okay, these are big historical lessons, but how do they apply, like, today in our lives?
Well, Hoskin's history gives us some really practical tools for thinking, I think.
Like what? Give us tip one.
Okay, tip one. Question your assumptions. Seriously. If the smartest people, using brilliant math and common sense, could believe the Earth was stationary for 1,400 years.
I'd be totally wrong.
Then what fundamental belief, what stationary Earth are you holding on to? In your work, your life, your politics, what core assumption might actually be limiting your view without you even realizing it? This history forces that kind of self-reflection.
That's a tough question to ask ourselves.
Yeah.
Tip two.
Tip two, the value of useless knowledge. Or maybe seemingly useless knowledge. Think about it. A lot of early astronomy, tracking stars, developing math. It was driven by things we might dismiss today, like astrology or philosophical ideas about harmony or just pure curiosity.
Right. Not immediate practical application.
But that useless pursuit led directly to the math, the navigation techniques, the timekeeping, basically the toolkit for much of modern science and technology. It's a powerful argument for supporting basic, curiosity-driven research, even when you can't see the payoff right away.
Fun the wondering. I like it. Tip three.
Tip three, cultivate long-term perspective.
Okay. How does stargazing help with my daily stress?
Well, maybe it doesn't pay your bills, but when you genuinely consider your daily worries, your anxieties, against the backdrop of this millennia-long human quest to understand deep time, cosmic evolution.
Billions of years, billions of galaxies.
It can sometimes just shrink the problems a little. It fosters patience. It reminds you that progress, real change, often happens over generations. Things move slowly, but they do move. It's a perspective shift.
Yeah, that cosmic viewpoint can be idly calming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so wrapping up, what was the biggest surprise for you digging into this, something that really jumped out?
For me, it was the sheer latency, the time lag between a discovery and its acceptance. Galileo sees proof the Earth moves in, what, 1609, 1610?
Yeah, phases of Venus, moons of Jupiter.
The visual evidence was pretty clear, yet it took almost 200 more years for the scientific and especially the religious establishment to fully, truly let go of the old geocentric framework.
Two centuries?
Yeah. The surprise isn't just the brilliant discovery. It's how incredibly long and difficult it is for us humans, collectively, to actually change our fundamental beliefs even when the evidence is piling up. That inertia is staggering.
Wow. That human element is inescapable.
Yeah.
And what's the final takeaway? The ultimate insight from Hoskin.
I think it's this beautiful paradox he highlights. The history of astronomy, this whole incredible journey. It does two things at once. It profoundly humbles us.
The cosmic demotion.
Right. Revealing just how tiny and insignificant we might seem in the grand cosmic scheme. But at the exact same time, it elevates us.
About so.
By demonstrating our species' absolutely remarkable our intellectual capacity to actually comprehend those vast universal principles, to figure out the rules of the game even on this cosmic scale. That capacity, built through centuries of persistence, collaboration, critical thinking, that is the real marvel in Hoskin's story.
Humility and wonder side by side. What a journey indeed.
Truly epic.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.